I recently read an interview with Earl Woods, who is the father of Tiger Woods and credited with a lot of his training. He seems to be the man that, from the time Tiger Woods was just a toddler, recognized his special giftedness for golf. But he seems to be more interested in how he brought him up to be a young man of some character. Now, Earl Woods didn't choose the text and wasn't preaching, but some of the things he said in the interview were very important because there's a lot of confusion today about what a father's supposed to do. He said there are two things a father's supposed to do. One is to provide for his children. The second one is to prepare them for responsible adulthood. Well, that sounds good. And I wonder if maybe we shouldn't hear more of that kind of thing because of the confusion, because of the uncertainty, especially in the last decades when we've had an emphasis on the uselessness of fathers, when we've had celebrities having babies without benefit of a father and not wanting any father around because they would just mess up the situation. But I want to tell you that there is an important job for fathers to do. This is not Father's Day. It's not yet. Next June. But I want to talk to you today about the work of fathers. And I want us to look at two passages in Ephesians and in Colossians that are sort of cognate texts, as these two books often have. We're going to look at the mention in both these letters of the work of fathers and take a little bit of lesson from it, I hope, about our responsibility today. Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 4, this is in the midst of discussing all about marriage and about children and parents and about the masters and servants and all of the domestic responsibilities and relational responsibilities there. And Paul writes in verse 4, "And you, fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord." And the similar passages, if you turn over about three pages to Colossians chapter 3, and Colossians verse 21, 3:21, a very similar thing, but adds one dimension, one little term that's helpful to us. "Fathers, do not provoke your children, lest they become discouraged." Now, in this text, let's make some observations. The first one is that the work of fathers is a dangerous business. Look at the possibilities. Paul says, do not do this because of the serious consequences. He says, do not provoke your children to wrath. And over here in Colossians we read, he do not provoke them, but lest they become discouraged. Now, there are probably not too many of us here today who haven't had some of that discouragement, who cannot look back to parents and think about parents, particularly fathers maybe, who stirred us up, who provoked us in some way that caused us to be bitter or discouraged even today. And if you are bitter toward your parents, one of the great qualifications for being an adult is to forgive your parents, whatever they did. And when I tell people that, sometimes they say, well, what do I forgive them for? I said, just think about it a while, you'll figure it out. Because all of us, as I told our kids when they were growing up, look, we're just doing the best we can. We don't know what we're doing here. So bear with us a little bit. And so parents need to be forgiven for you to get that behind you and move on to be a healthy parent. But how do you guess a father could provoke his children? This provoke to wrath means just exactly that. That's what the word means. The discouragement, the word in Colossians for provoke is a different word, but it means to stir up. And the suggestion of one Bible scholar was that it means to continually nag. I've heard a little bit of nagging. Have you ever heard some nagging from parents? When I was a kid, they had a song called Yakety Yak, Don't Talk Back. And it was a nagging song. And everything we heard on there, we'd all heard our parents say, take out the trash and all this other stuff. Parents are good at nagging, fathers particularly. Because mothers say, wait till your father gets home and he'll nag you. It's his job. Bitterness. How do you think fathers provoke their children to wrath? I think there are probably two possibilities, one on one end and one on the other. The one end is bullying them. If you're a father and you bully your children, that is to say, but throw your weight around, behave in a way that is geared to satisfy your desires for the moment, like I can't stand this little noisy kid, so I'm going to scream at him, or I'm going to jerk him up and throw him in his room, or I'm going to do something to please myself, then that bullying will cause a child to be provoked to wrath. Or if maybe on the other side is neglecting children, making promises. When I get home, we're going to go throw some balls out in the backyard. And then you come home after dark, it's too late, and I'm sorry, son, I just, you know, couldn't do it. Over and over, this kind of thing happens until the child begins to realize, Dad doesn't really have time for me. He doesn't care for me. So this is a discouraging thing. This causes that dispiritedness, that bitterness. Now, some fathers will say, well, I didn't make this child rebellious and bitter. He came rebellious. And that's true. Children do come rebellious. We have some grandchildren that are that way. You know, James Dobson wrote a book, The Strong-Willed Child. So far, we've had 4 strong-willed children and 14 strong-willed grandchildren. They're all this way. How do they get this way? We have 1 2-year-old little girl whose parents are here, so I'm not going to point them out, who is a terror. I mean, once she learned how to walk and talk, she figured she was supposed to stomp through the house giving orders, because that's what it is to be 2. How does she get that way? You ask that about your children, and each one of you says it's their side of the family. It's not our side. Our people aren't like that. But this is the way children are. Children are going to be this way. This way. This is why it's necessary for us to understand that we have to learn to deal with them, not to provoke them, not to stir them up, not to get them all discouraged and bitter. My wife and I were last summer at the Cove, the Billy Graham Center in Asheville. And there just happened to meet a woman who was in her 60s. Lovely lady, good Christian woman, who happened to talk to my wife about the need for forgiveness. She came there because the theme of the week was forgiveness. She says, I need to learn to forgive. And so she began to tell her story a little bit. So Sharon told her, well, you need to talk to my husband because he can walk you through this thing and maybe help you with it. So she made an appointment. We sat down and talked. And I discovered that she's been carrying bitterness toward her father. Now, he was a rascal in some ways. He really did some abusive things. But she's been carrying a bitterness toward him for over 60 years, but at least 55. Couldn't get rid of it. Didn't know how to deal with it. So we walked through and prayed through it, and she began to get some relief from it. But the fact of it is, do you see how important when he says, do not provoke your children to wrath. Do not make them bitter, because that's what happens to children. Not a one of us here who doesn't remember words like this. Can't you ever do anything right? Anything like that? How many times have I told you? Why can't you be like the kid down the street? Recognize some of those? This kind of bullying with children is why this thing is so dangerous, because what we're doing is we're operating out of our own desires. We're operating out of our own what's pleasant for me, rather than asking this question, what does this child need from me right now? That's the question. Well, so what is the solution? Do not provoke them to bitterness, but train them. Notice what he says. But in verse 4, but bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord. Now, these two words, the word training just means bring them up in the child rearing. It's a word that's related to the word child. And it talks about what children need. What do children need? They need to be brought up to be responsible adults. So this is the second part of observations we want to make. In the first place, the work of fathers is dangerous business because you're dealing with a child that could you leave a mark on him his whole life. Second, the work of fathers is preparation for life. We're talking about a whole 70 years plus that you're preparing that little child for. Training and discipline, training and admonition. Bring them up in the training. Training has to do with whatever a child needs to become, to character training. The admonition word has to do with, it's a different word, it means is a combination of the word mind and the word putting something in his mind. Now, training. What kind of training are we talking about here? Think about it. What kind of training does a child need to become a responsible adult? What do you think? One thing I think that is important at this point we might use is training a child to listen and take instructions. Training a child to listen and take instructions. You know, I have seen parents in church even whose children were just like new puppies. You know how a puppy is? Run around, you can whistle, you can do anything you want to, and they don't pay any attention to you. The children are like that. Now, all of our children have had selective deafness. Selective meaning they choose what to hear and what not to hear. And so you don't know whether they're going to listen to you or not. You call their name and it just goes right over their heads. All the grandchildren seem to have the same disease. I don't know where it comes from. But you never train a child to sit down and look you in the eye and take instruction and listen. That child is going to be handicapped because he's never going to know how to listen. And all his life, somebody's going to be trying to tell him what to do. This is the way life is for adults. Don't train children to be children. They'll get that part. Train them to be adults. Train them to relate to adults. There's children that I know of, I've been to church from time to time, that cannot relate to adults. Well, you say, well, the big people, it's hard to relate to. No, they're not. There's other little kids that have no trouble because their parents have trained them to be able to talk to adults and to express themselves, however limited their expression may be. Why is that important? Because they're going to live most of their life as adults. And this is an adult world. Train them to be responsible adults. Train them what? To be able to take instruction and listen. To pay attention. The other day I was having a meal with some folks, and they have a six-year-old. And he was wallowing all over his mother. Wallowing, is that a good, that's a good description. You get the picture. You know what I mean? Down, up and down. And this is a big kid. I mean, six-year-old's a pretty good-sized kid. And she would try to talk to him, and she'd pick him back up, and he would fall back down and limp. And he's on her lap. And then he would, then he wanted to go down and run around. And it was like a two-year-old. He'd never been trained. Look me in the eye, sit down, and be quiet. Is that necessary for training? Why is it necessary? Because kids don't know to do this unless you teach them, unless you tell them. They're not going to know this. Our kids bring their grandkids over, and they say, now don't run in the house. Grandma and Grandpa aren't used to this running in the house. Well, there's a lot that they do we're not used to. But, so they're not supposed to run in the house. And that's true. My wife hardly ever runs in the house. I don't run in the house. I mean, it's just not the way we do it at our house, see? But what you got to do is you got to get that child, look at him in the eye, and get him to listen. Training him how to listen and take instruction, because if you don't, he'll never be able to keep a job, never be able to get his lessons right at school. What's another thing you need to train a child to do? Train a child to work and finish a task. When I was a kid growing up, my parents taught me to work, but that was a different generation. Way back when Dr. Patterson was young. My parents expected me to work. And you know what they did? They never thought to make it fun. They didn't care if it was fun. Just go do it. I had to milk a cow. And bring in the milk. My mother would bottle it up. This is what we did. We lived out in the country. And I would have to go out and milk this cow. Well, you try to wash your hands after that so you can go to school, see? Well, you still smell like cow all day. And so I'm going to school, and somebody says, what is that smell? I say, I don't know. You know, I don't know what that is. It smells kind of like a cow, but I'm not going to own up to it. But I tell you one thing, milking that cow every morning, I had the best grip in the junior high school. You know how little kids like that to get a hold of each other and try to put one on his knees? I could put them all down. They didn't know it was from this milking machine that I had to be. But you know, my parents never stopped and said, I hope you'll go do this work, honey, and hope it's fun. It wasn't fun. I hated it. Go clean out the chicken house. Anybody ever clean out a chicken house? Just use your imagination for you city folks. And my father would always come home and inspect everything and brag on me about how great a job I did. Teach a child to work. Why? Otherwise, they're handicapped. A student in this school, 5 or 6 years ago, living in Johnson Dorm, came to my office. He was on academic probation because he couldn't get it together with school. And so we talked a bit, and he said, I don't know what to do. He said, I can't keep a job. He said, I've tried several jobs, and nothing ever works out. He said, I try to study. He said, I make up my mind. I'm going to study, but it just doesn't happen. And I thought, well, probably you make up your mind to go to work, and it doesn't happen, too. Or you make up your mind and go to work, and then you make up your mind to work, and it doesn't happen. So I asked him some questions about his discipline in his life, and then I asked this question. I said, when you were a child growing up, did your parents make you work? Did they give you chores to do? No, he said. They didn't even have you clean up your own room? Nah, my mama did that. I said, did they make some rules for the household, and you had to be in at a certain time? And no, they didn't do that. Now, here's a child. Not a child. Here's a grown man, handicapped. Cannot function in an adult way. His parents never trained him to take instruction. They never trained him to work. They never trained him. A third thing I would suggest is to manage your time and your stuff. Teach children how to do that. Manage their time and their stuff. If they're adults, are they going to have to do this? They may wind up managing a lot of people's time and stuff, but not if you don't teach them how. Not if you don't teach them. Well, training. Like a coach. Spring training, and the guys get out on the field, and they run plays, and they do wind sprints, and they do all this. What's the coach driving them like that for? So they'll know how to function in the game. Who's going to teach the kids how to function in an adult world? Who's going to teach them if it's not you, Dad? Now, I know sometimes that dads feel like they're kind of cut out of the system. That is to say, in some homes, you don't have a father and a mother model. You have a mother and an assistant mother. It's supposed to be funny, but it's not really. That is to say, mom notices pretty quickly that dad's a little too harsh with the children, that dad fumbles around too much changing diapers, that dad doesn't seem to know how to get those little footy pajamas on, that dad's got problems, see? So he says, here, and hands the babies to mama. And she says, oh, yes, and she cuddles them up and protects them from father, and father doesn't get to discipline them. And what happens? What happens? He's out of the loop, and he begins to decide, this is the way it's supposed to be. I'll make the money, you make the kids. And you bring them up. Now, my wife, when we were, our children were young, we had two sets, 10 years apart. We liked the first set so well, we got another set. Two each. But the first set, we didn't know much what we were doing. I'm amazed that they're, you know, clothed and in their right minds today, the first set. Sometimes they're amazed at that. The second set, we kind of got it right because we'd been through it. But my wife was a little nervous about me because I'm too harsh with the children, you know. But you know what happened when they got to be about 13 and they're bigger than her and taller than her and hairier and everything else? And she wanted to say, you take them. Well, I didn't want to take them when they're 13 after she'd messed them up for 13 years. Look, I want to get them when they're little. I want to start from the beginning and take them all the way through. See, a father has to be in the process. He has to be a part of the thing all the way through. And I'll tell you, You moms, you need to understand that they're going to be a little rougher than you are and a little harsher. But most of the time, they're not talking about abuse here. We're talking about style. And children need to have a daddy. They need to know that there's a male with some virility about him that's a good model of a godly man. And young girls need to know that there's a man that you can trust to always take care of you. My daughter used to tell me this. She said, Dad, this is when she was in college, high school, college, and beyond. She said, Dad, it's your job to take care of me until God sends me the man that's supposed to take care of me. It's your job. She never had any qualms about calling and saying, send money. So when I handed the baton of her care off to that young man whom she married, who was a splendid young fellow, I was happy to do it. Now she talks to him about money. But the fact of it is, it was my job. And for her to grow up knowing you can trust him, you can trust a godly man. Women need to know that. Training. Maybe train them how to take care of their stuff. Train them to work. Train them to be happy when there's not things don't please them. You know what? If your goal is to keep your kids happy, you will be miserable. That's not your job, to keep them happy. Adults don't have to have somebody trying to keep them happy. Let me ask you, you're all adults in here. Tell me who is working really hard to keep you happy. Can you think of anybody? Oh, I know your wives and husbands try to please each other. But you know what? If a couple's about to get married, and he says something like this, oh, she's everything I've been looking for. Ah, for what? For me. And she says, I just know I'm going to be so happy. And then what do each of them expect the other one to do? Now you are responsible for my happiness. Forget it. It's not going to happen. Adults decide to be happy and they're going to be happy in spite of whatever or else. You know, that's the point. I love the fact that we can just decide to be happy. Our son, whom I'm not going to name, who is here. When he was, quite a little while ago. When he was a little toddler, he would come get up in the morning and be in a bad mood. So he would come out and his brother did the same thing. In the little pajamas with the feet on them, you know, little bunnies on. He'd come out in the morning like this with a bad mood. And I'd say, go back in your room till you can be happy. That's right. You've got to teach children attitude. That they're responsible for the attitudes. We say, well, that's cruel. Send that poor little toddler back to his room to get happy. You know what he would do? He'd go back in there, and he would lay down on the floor and kick the door for a while. Bang, 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 bang. And then pretty soon, he'd get up and get over it and come out and be happy and say, good morning. Now, you say, well, that's cruel. That's terrible. And you know what? His wife loves it. 39 years old, what if he was still getting up in his little footy pajamas coming out in a bad mood? Not good. You have to train children to be happy whether they like it or not. I was down here on North Main getting some exercise, and I passed by a woman with one of those high-speed with the big wheels baby carriage. You know, the kind you jog with. She got out of a car, and she was put a little child, not much more than 1 year old, in that carriage. And then she had two stuffed animals, and she said, now, do you want this one or this one? This little kid didn't know. What do you know? I mean, don't try to keep the child happy. Just say, here, take this stuffed animal. I mean, just, it's okay. You know, the kid doesn't know. We were in front of our house, and some friends of ours, a wife came. She had a little girl about 2 and a half. And while my wife and she were chatting, and I was out there, they were just kept on leaving. You know, it took them a long time. The doors on the car were open, and she said to the little daughter, she said, get in the front seat and strap up. Well, the little girl fooled around and whined a while and then said, I want to sit in the back seat. So she said, get in the back seat then and strap up. So this was before we had the law telling me which seat the child could sit in. So in a minute, she's whining some more, and then she climbed over and she said, I want to sit in the front seat. And I thought, well, that's all the seats there are. See, this is it, front or back seat. This is it. And her mother said, well, honey, whatever makes you happy. And I thought, oh. Bad news, whatever makes you happy. Parents need to just tell their children and guide them and lead them, because they will learn then when they're adults. I'm not happy, but I'm responsible. Because life is not about being happy with everything. Are you happy to get up and go to work? Some of you work UPS, get up at what, 1 o'clock and get there at 2 or whatever it is. You happy with that? I mean, you're just hilarious. You're crazy if you are. I mean, some of us who work at the seminary aren't too happy about coming here sometimes. Especially for these 7:30 and 8 o'clock classes. But it's not a problem of being happy. Overall, in the long run, we're happy. We're praising God. But we learn to be responsible. Adults. So you train them. And that training is vital. Put them through their paces. Because you're a life coach. The other word is admonition. This is a word, as I said, made up of the word nous and the word for put. This meaning your mind, you're putting something in their mind. Now, you have to put something in the mind of the child. We got these little infants that, and our grandchildren. And you look at a little infant, you know, it's amazing how quickly they learn to look you in the eye. And you hold them, a little one like that, hadn't been here too many weeks, and you look at him and you think, what's he thinking about? He's not thinking about anything. He don't know how to think about anything. Because there's nothing in his brain. What do you mean, what's he thinking about? You got to put something in there. You know what I mean? You're starting with an opportunity here. And that's what the word means. Put something in his mind. Now, what are you going to put in his mind? We're going to put the word. We're going to put the principles of the word of God. Because otherwise, he'll be ill-equipped to deal with life. We had our children memorizing scripture from the time they could talk. Because they need to learn the word. They need to understand principles to make decisions by. I had a friend not long ago. Oh, several years ago now, but it's been... He came to me and he said, you know, you had a lot of kids. He says, I'm really worried about my son. I said, what's the problem? He said, well, he's 17 years old. He's got a car, driving around the community, dating a girl that I'm not pleased with. And he said, I just don't know what's going to happen. He's over at her house and her parents aren't there. And he went into all this, and I said, and he's 17? He said, yeah. I mean, out there all hairy and big jaw and long neck and driving a 2,000-pound car in the streets of Wake Forest. This is dangerous. So he's worried. I said, well, how old do you think he is really emotionally and spiritually? He said, maybe 12. So what you've got is this guy with all the equipment of a man out running around, but he's 12. We have to put some principles in their minds. Teach them something. Something positive. Something from the Word. Some principles. I always love to teach my kids this verse. It says, those who mock their parents, the birds of the desert will pluck out their eyes. I like that one. And I used to tell the kids, watch out for the birds. You know, those key principles like that. But you teach your... You teach your children the content of biblical principles like your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit. Like sexual relationships are for marriage only. Just, they learn from the time they're little, putting something in there, training them. Well, the last observation we make, we don't have time to discuss much, is that this not only is the work of fathers dangerous business, not only is it preparation for life, but it also is a commission from the Lord. It says, in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Who is it that gives you this job? Did you just fall into this job? I used to tell my children, listen, kids, let me tell you something. You better behave because God's going to be on my case bad if you don't. And they kind of like that. God's going to get him. You know, he's always on us, but man, the Lord's going to get him one day. And they could just see God with a big switch or something taking care of Pop. But you know, that's right. I have to answer to God. Hey, I gave you those kids. What'd you do with those kids I gave you? Do we have a godly heritage here or what? It's God's commission. About 1921, in Beaumont, my grandfather, Bob McCauley, Sunday afternoon, 5 o'clock, was taking his little family, wife and two little girls, to the movies, because that's what they did. They called it the picture show. Every Sunday afternoon, they went to the picture show. So he passed the street in Beaumont that would have been the one to turn on to go to the Kyle Theater. And he didn't turn, he kept going. And his wife said, Bob, you missed the turn. Well, the little kids in the back, no seat belts in those days, both came up and put their chins on the back of the front seat and said, Daddy, where are we going? He said, we're going to church. They were shocked. His wife says, I don't want to go to church. I want to go to the picture show. And the kids started whining and carrying on. He says, we're going to church. One of those statements like this is the end of the discussion. And you know, from then on, they went to church. And everybody in that family turned to the Lord. My grandmother was baptized while carrying one of my aunts She was expecting and baptized pretty large that time. This all happened, and my mother became a Christian, sang in church, sang in a ham crusade down there. There's all this happened, and you know what? Here I am today. God's allowed me the wonderful privilege of being in ministry. And I think, frankly, my grandfather deciding to make a spiritual decision about what to do with his family was critical to my being here today. And 60 or 80 years from now, there are going to be some people you don't even imagine now are going to be saying, thank God for Grandma and Grandpa bringing up our parents right. It's a big